Welcome, Regent Beeson.
Good morning.
Good morning. I know that you have been through this process before, but I will, for our new members of the council, also just reiterate the process here. And that is that we will have you open with a brief statement. We will open the floor for questions. And then when we are getting close to the end of our time together, I will let the group know so that we can wrap things up and give you an opportunity to ask us any questions and provide a closing statement. So with that, I will invite you to open.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members of RCAC for the opportunity to present my credentials for re-election to the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota representing the 4th Congressional District. 6 years ago, I sat before you and members of the Minnesota Legislature and pledged, if elected, I would commit my energy, talent, and reputation to protect and improve this most important of state institutions. I've kept my word and now ask for your support again in 2015. 4 years, 2 years ago, my colleagues asked me to be chair of the board, and that was a great honor, and I have unfinished business, but also the energy, the experience, and the ability to effect positive and sustainable improvement and to execute on projects and changes in culture now underway. Before I touch on that work, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a product of a 1950s Minneapolis working class family. My father was a World War II Air Force pilot and attended the university under the GI Bill. My mother also attended the university in the 1940s and began the important business of starting a family. I lived at home and worked during college, commuting, carpooling, or occasionally hitchhiking. There's a few in this audience that might remember what that was like. Actually, fairly efficient mode of transportation back in the 70s. But like 85% of my fellow students, no rec centers, no coffee bars, no granite countertops, just a few long lines at the registrars, and yes, great, great teachers, and a home-cooked meal at the end of a long day. My wife and I have been married 33 years. We raised two children here in St. Paul. Are blessed to have two grandsons. Following graduation, I worked in the public sector under former Mayor George Latimer in the field of city planning and economic development. After 10 years of increasing leadership, I moved into the private sector at Sunrise Bank in St. Paul, which is where I still work full-time 27 years later. I was president of the socially responsible commercial bank for over 20 years, successfully navigating through booms and recessions while helping thousands of small businesses, non-for-profit organizations, to families in a personal and caring manner. At the same time, I began an involvement in civic engagement through service on over 40 boards and committees, including St. Paul's major leadership volunteer positions, a number of which are detailed in my application. I've been fortunate to have a meaningful and connected leadership career in and among the various sectors, with, of course, now 6 years at the center of the country's largest public research institution, the University of Minnesota. My life's work has been characterized by an independent style and an ability to focus on the analytics while also relating to people in an authentic manner. I have a reputation for asking for direct and probing questions. I adhere to the basic principles of governance, which are particularly critical to an institution as large and complex as the University of Minnesota. Simply put, presidents manage and regents govern. I both managed and governed, and this provides me clarity and appreciation of each of these distinct roles. But because we also operate in a public and hyper-information environment and are constantly making high-level decisions in what I would call the gray area, board leaders can and should also add value as informal-sounding boards and confidants. Presidents have few people inside their institutions with whom they can confide on the most difficult or sensitive matters. As someone who can be trusted and given my life experience, I also serve in that capacity. Hiring and managing a president is, of course, the single most important act of a board of the Board of Regents. As one of only three remaining regents who will have been involved in the hiring of Dr. Eric Kaler, you should evaluate my worthiness through the performance lens of the Kaler administration over the past 3.5 years. He was, in my opinion, and still is, the right choice at the right time to lead the University of Minnesota. Hope we can use the bulk of the question period to discuss in detail my priorities for the University of Minnesota and how I intend to accomplish them in concert with the President and my colleagues. For the record, let me briefly restate my priorities. Number one, ensuring affordability and excellence through wise stewardship of financial resources. Number two, improvement to our once-renowned medical school. and strategic development of our relationship with Fairview Health. Number three, planning for demographic changes and achieving diversity at all levels. As chair, I've worked to align these priorities into the university's strategic plan, into the president's goals and objectives, and into the board's annual work plan at committees and the full board. Despite our progress, higher ed faces great hurdles and challenges, and the university, of course, is not immune to the significant changes in demographics and the realities in the new economy. To guide our own work, I refer to our strategic plan, which just was approved this fall, which states the University of Minnesota will be preeminent in solving the grand challenges of a diverse and changing world. If I have the privilege of your recommendation, the support of the Minnesota Legislature, I'm committed to helping realize this vision and helping make this great university even better. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Regent Beeson. I'm going to take the liberty of asking the first question today, which is, in your opinion, where do you feel that you have added the greatest value as a regent, and where do you feel that you will add the greatest value moving forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I would say my greatest value has been in the focus on the medical school and the academic health center. As chair, the last year and a half, I formed a special committee on academic medicine. In the past, we've spent about 5% of our time on this area that includes medical school, the vet school, pharmacy, public health, nursing, et cetera. And it's really about 40% of our budget. So I put a spotlight on this and formed a committee which will which I would expect will continue the next 2 years. It's critically important to our research operation. It's critically important to our brand. It's critically important to our financial strength that we focus on this. And I'm proud to say that I have pushed that agenda. I've also spent a lot of time, and this is also a priority of mine, is in the area of operational excellence, working very closely with the president. I bring the best practices of the private sector to this. Operational excellence isn't really, there are a lot of great values and aspects of the university, but financial management isn't always the top priority, shall we say, of a large research institution. It's very large and very complex and decentralized, and it's solid spending a lot of time on that. I hope by the end of my next 6 years that we'll have made significant progress in that regard.
Thank you. Council members?
Madam Chair. Regent Beeson, just to expand a little bit on the issues with the medical center. You mentioned the things you formed a committee to work on the future of the medical center. What is, in your vision, should be the outcome? Where do we need to go compared to, you mentioned the once renowned, how we become once again renowned?
The Madam Chair, Mr. Rogers, let me address it this way. Our medical school has great faculty and great staff, but we are not as productive as we should be in terms of research grants and applications and scholarships. And this has been stated publicly by our new dean of the medical school, who we brought in from Johns Hopkins, and he has made the point that all faculty members need to produce, and so we're going to be introducing metrics and measurements for doing that. And we have great people doing good works, but we need more people in the school doing that. Secondly, we need a strategy with Fairview, we have, over the last year, set up an integrated structure so that all healthcare activity on campus, including the old Ann Platts Hospital, our former hospital, which we sold to Fairview, the clinics, now have an integrated accounting and structure to monitor costs and revenues. And this is a very big thing. We'll build a benchmark against that. We need a plan, a real estate plan around the medical school campus south of Washington. We don't have one. We've got aging buildings. We need a new medical education center, so we need to work. We need to work on that. We've introduced M Health now. You'll see now that you're when you go over there, you won't see the Fairview name at all on campus. It's now been replaced by M Health, and this is part of our evolution with Fairview. So we have a single brand that reduces the confusion that is around having Fairview and University of Minnesota together.
Thank you.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Madam Chair, Regent Beeson, with regard to your comments on the medical center, the hospital, Fairview, what I didn't hear in those comments was anything with regard to patients. And so in my own view, what separates the good, the mediocre from the great is excellent and outstanding medical patient-centered care. So could you comment on that and what your vision might be for measuring that and metrics around that and what your commitment would be as chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bonhoeff, I didn't mean my comments to be single-dimensional as it relates just to the need for producing more research by our staff. Our medical school faculty does, they teach, they do this research, and then they spend a lot of time in the clinical side working with patients, often very, very sick patients. And the quality of that care is critical. I think we could use more work in measuring what that quality is and be able to benchmark against that. We have our partnership with Fairview is such that we only receive about 30% of our hospital visits from Fairview patients, Fairview customers. So we need to integrate closer with Fairview on the clinical side as they're referring folks into the university hospital for complex and serious conditions. So at the end of the day, this is about quality care of people and not an inanimate sort of discussion about research. This is really about people and the quality of care and the outcomes, saving lives. A year ago, I had the president of the university give me a call. It was about this time of year. He said, I want you to meet with the president or with the head football coach at Florida State. Now, what we have a coach. He's a good coach. Why is the football coach of Florida State coming up to Minnesota? Turns out that his son has a condition. He's been public about this. His Fanconi's anemia. And we are a world center for transplantation and bone marrow work. And he came to this university with his two sons and his wife without a plan. And the son was suffering badly. And he left with the son's life saved. So this touches folks in ways that get very personal very quickly. And a lot of those stories that sit with me.
Madam Chair, Chair Beeson, to follow up on the medical school theme, when we think of the university, we think of the football team before we think of the medical school and the medical component. Would you quantify for us what the size of the whole medical enterprise, the school and the medical facilities within the university is, just in terms of dollars or employees or whatever, and how you see it fitting into the future growth of the university with respect to making the university a top 10 public university or top 5 or where we want to go. How important is that in that objective?
Madam Chair, Mr. Erickson, thank you for that question. Somebody told me a few years ago, well, universities are defined by football teams and by medical schools. Those are the goalposts within which brands are built. It has been revealing and important, this work on the Academic Health Center. As I mentioned, our budget is $3.5 billion, and the Academic Health umbrella, which includes not only medical school but these other activities, is about 40%. And it drives the research side. most of the large grants of the National Institute of Health and other granting agencies are come through the medical school, so it's really critical. We provide 70% of the health care employment graduates in the state of Minnesota, and so we're, same time we're doing this research, we're also educating graduate, undergraduate, and these professional students, and it is so and our medical school is serving underserved areas around the state more than other medical schools, and that's that hurts our rankings in some regard, but it's an important public mission. So I can't think of anything. Everything's an issue there. Everything's important, but I can't think, now that I've been on this board for 6 years, anything more important than getting this right and really elevating our academic health center and our partnership with Fairview, with all the changes going on in healthcare and all the competition we have with us, and all these related but separate sort of activities going on there. I think this is the key issue facing the university at the state of Minnesota in terms of the value we can be adding. We've got 65,000 students throughout the state. More, I want to talk about our coordinate system campuses as well. So we're doing a lot. We are one of only four universities that have both a medical school and a school of agriculture. So it's a far-flung, highly decentralized operation. But I think the medical school and the academic health initiatives are the most important. And the governor now has established a blue ribbon committee that folks are working on that will take that, some of these ideas I'm talking about and putting them back to the legislature and in front of the university to try to create policy and some recommendations.
Madam Chair.
Pat is next, and then
Sonia,
and then
we'll
get to Paul. Thank you.
And then me.
Following up a little bit on that theme, and actually I would like to ask about your role as chairman, and as you see turnover in the board, we're going to lose an awful lot of experience. I mean, we have got two members who have turned out, and with the passing of another regent, and potentially yourself, assuming you have a good chance at being reappointed. But what is your perspective as a board chair about you focused a lot on medical needs, and a couple of the regents who have termed out had significant experience there. What is, as board chair, what do you see as leadership concerns for the rest of the board outside of your seat?
I think we're a young board. Madam Chair, Mr. Duncan, I think we're a young board. We've lost people through death. Regent Larson just died a couple of months ago. We've had regents resign. We've had regents be defeated. We've had regents not elect not to run for a second term. So on. I think we're a young board, and my hope would be that you, whoever, you know, for this seat or any of the seats that you recommend, highly experienced people. We are, two of the three people we're losing have medical health care experience. My own view is you should have somebody that has been in health care at some point. I just really believe that that's going to be front and center. They will need to, the question I would ask them are they going to be able to be in a position of leadership someday at the University of Minnesota and sit with the president, make the hardest decisions that they might have to, that might be against their interests of their current employer or their affiliates. That's really the key. That's for them to answer and for you to decide, but I believe that's critical. The other need I think we have is, and I want to talk about operational excellence and the financials, being the banker. I want to talk about this. This is huge. The money we're going to have for investment will largely come from the money we save from the expenses that are duplicative and unnecessary. I want to talk about that if we could. But I think it took me time to ramp up my thinking because I'm a small business banker, and losing, when Regent Larson was in his prime, he was a great, you know, thinker and had a big vision, having come from Cargill, for example, and he talked a lot about cultural change, and that's finally sort of sunk into me. We deal with transactions and projects, but he would contend and always did that we have to change culture, and this is that's a theme that I want to focus on as we talk about money. The money about how do we change culture of money management. That's not been it doesn't mean the past presidents haven't had to deal with reductions, because they have, and they've been hard. But doing it in a systematic way, in a measurable way, with metrics and dashboards, and I want to talk about that. But I think having somebody that could step in, we're losing 36 years of experience among the three, and they're all really good regents, in my view.
Follow-up on the operational excellence. Could you go a little deeper there, please?
Madam Chair, Mr. Duncanson, this is within months of President Kaler starting, he, with the advice of the board, began a committee on operational excellence. And we've now institutionalized this, and I advised the president to quantify the goals, because I believe goal setting drives behaviors. It has the potential to drive culture. So the president, we came up with a goal over 5 years of $90 million, cost reductions, and if Representative Pawlowski were here, he would understand, because we've forwarded these. As the board sees these reductions, we see these, and we're measuring those, and we hope to exceed that. But without having goals set, and I come from a banking background, you measure, you quantify, and so we started to do that. We get regular updates at the board on operational excellence. So all four of our standing committees have presentations by our vice presidents, who at the beginning of the calendar year agreed to update us on some of the projects. Let me tell you a little bit about some of the work that we're doing in operational excellence. What we have turned a human resources department upside down. On modernization. One of the first tasks has been a reduction of the number of job titles, and this will be reduced by thousands. And the culture had been that somebody wanted to, I'm overstating this a little bit, but I'm trying to make a point about an advancement or a promotion, you get a new job title. So we ended up with an inconsistent and sort of wide range of job titles that it was that is hard to glean much from. So we're cleaning that up. At the same time, we have assigned for each person's work, whether they are if they're in the mission side, or they're in the support side, or they're in the administrative side. So we put people into three buckets. The national data is unhelpful as it relates to higher education. This is a big surprise to me when I started the work, because having come from banking, I could always rely on data about my peer groups. I know where I'm strong, I know where I'm weak, and this does not exist in higher education. And so we have a situation where Ohio State might be filling out the forms nationally about, well, what's a manager, what's a supervisor, what's a leader, and different ways. So the data is really unhelpful. So we created a, which I think will be a national class cost management system that we will be able to say, and we already measured our administrative cost reductions in the first year. We've already quantified that. We think we can do all that and have clarity, better job descriptions, more equity. We had inequitable sort of pay with different titles. All that's getting sort of washed through right now. Focus on graduations, another major initiative of saving money for the university and for students, is all about graduation. We pushed up 4- and 6-year graduation rates significantly. That's going well. We're going to have, before I'm reelected and before I'm done, we will have a dashboard for the board. We have not had a dashboard. This goes to the metrics conversation. It's what's in every business is a dashboard of the 12 or 15 most important things we're trying to accomplish at the board level. Now, the president's agreed to produce hundreds of his own metrics below those that we won't see or we won't participate in, but they will flow down from these. So these will be graduation rates. It'll be research activity, productivity at the medical school will be about, you know, things going on around the state. But we'll have these, and they're going to be available. We don't have that right now. I'm just saying this is in front of our board right now. Mr. Steves is here, executive director. He's working on that project right now, and we've looked around the country. There's different forums. There's different ways. The University of Texas has got way too much at the board level, so we're not trying to, as you would expect. But I'm excited about that. So those are just some of the projects we're working on. We're also, I will say, beginning a clustering of the backroom functions, and my preference initially had been to centralize all the unemotional sort of areas, the non-academic areas in the backroom. The University of Michigan is going through this right now. It hasn't gone particularly well. The savings that were predicted haven't worked, but the president's taken the approach of clustering functions, so HR, finance, purchasing, technology is present in every one of these 20 colleges and units that we've got, and there's duplication in there. There's lack of best practices in some cases, so we're beginning to cluster those together, and we're going to measure those, and we're holding the Vice President of Human Resources accountable for those. For that. So it's pretty exciting. I think there's room there. We did the outside studies that were commissioned by the legislature, both the spans and layers and a cost study. They came back and said we're in the range. We're not this is not broken. This is not a huge problem. But I reading those reports and looking at what I have, I only see opportunity to save money and to put that money back into the academic side, bend the cost curve for students. So we can keep this thing affordable. And, of course, we need the help of the legislature. That's the other piece of this, and thank you for your support 2 years ago. We have a 2%. If we were to give everybody a 2% raise, that would require more money than what we're asking for the legislature this year. So we have to make up part of that. We have other costs beyond the compensation going up. We have to make up all of that over and above what we're asking for from the legislature through philanthropy and through cost savings.
Thank you. Sonia?
Yes. Madam Chair, Regent Beeson, you came in to your stint as a regent as a banker, not as a healthcare expert. And yet I'm impressed with your scope of knowledge and strategic actions you took in that field. You've talked a lot about them, and you wrote eloquently about them. So how does one come without a healthcare background, as you did, and become knowledgeable? What did you bring from that career, and how might it work for others?
Madam Chair, Ms. Kearns, I bring a curiosity. I have a really insatiable appetite for knowledge and for work, and it's basically what that was. And in business, sort of focusing on where are the opportunities, where are we weakest, it was pretty clear to me that this was an era that needed focus. It's not that work hadn't been done. The previous administration and my predecessors built out, with the help of the legislature, a fabulous biomedical discovery district that really is the basis for around which we sort of build the medical school and make the improvements that we're now talking about. So that work has all been done, and other priorities were dealt with earlier. But this is a job either you decide very quickly whether it's a working job if you're going to be effective, and it requires a great deal of study. I do not have any background in higher education at all. Just the terminology was daunting, and there is no substitute for working.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Paul?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Regent Beeson. You mentioned in your opening remarks the strategic plan in Grand Challenges. Understanding the difference between governance and management, what are the important roles that you see the Board of Directors playing in helping us move ahead with the strategic plan?
Thank you, Mr. Taylor, Madam Chair. The going through a strategic planning exercise, and it was done under my watch, has been really critical. We decided President Kaler needed 2 years on the job before he could start this, and we're very pleased with how this process. There was great input by the faculty. They own the document. The staff owns the document. You always want that, and we don't want these things sitting on a credenza. The question really is, and we put this on the work agenda, is how do we implement it? How do we take this plan and make it meaningful and have it continue into the future? And so this is going to be in front of the board with that issue. Part of it is going to be these metrics and measurements, because at the end of the day, we can't manage without knowing how we measure. And so we are really focused on that as the president. The plan is good. It's got the right, I think it resonates with the stakeholders. But like all plans, it really depends on how well we implement those and whether... And we're going to hold ourselves accountable. We're going to hold the staff, and I'll hold the president accountable to implementing that plan.
Thank you. We have four additional questions at this point, so I'm going to ask that we try to keep responses on the brief side, if possible. Margaret?
Yes, Madam Chair, Regent Beeson, you talked about in your opening remarks what you thought were the strengths that you brought as Chair of a Board of Regents. What's your greatest disappointment over the last 6 years? And if you could wind the clock back, how would you replay that, particularly your individual role?
Madam Chair, Ms. Carlson, I would say the greatest disappointment was the Wall Street Journal article and the publicity that followed that, and the embarrassment that the board and the administration had around what was reported. It was inaccurate, to my opinion, to a large extent. But on the other hand, it also sort of served as a wake-up call that this industry had to change. And that's hard when you're on the governing board, because, you know, what it's saying is, well, for the last 156 years, this board is, you know, we haven't focused the amount of time we need to on the cost end of it. Again, it's not saying that previous people did not make difficult decisions. They did, and they've cut out a lot of costs over time. But this is a new era now that we're in, and so I think that was really difficult.
Follow up, your role, what would you have done differently? Because remember, we've winded the clock back.
Madam Chair, Ms. Carlson, I don't think I was ready to contribute after this happened on my second or third year. I just wasn't, you know, I just don't think I was ready. I wasn't in a position of leadership, and I don't think I was as clear as I am now about the work that had to be done. But I am responsible for any, you know, all that happens, and I accept that.
Ardell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Regent Beeson. What is the relationship, should it be, between Mayo Clinic and UMR, the University of Minnesota Rochester, whose focus is on health sciences?
Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, thank you for that question. Our Rochester campus is exciting. It is putting a flag in Rochester was one of the great accomplishments of the previous administration. Partly, it's growing. You know, it's growing with the city, and as the city lays out its plans, is the university's campus is ready and willing to grow with it. Obviously, we are educating almost all healthcare health education students in a variety of undergraduate and graduate positions and providing the workforce. So I think at one level we are the workforce. This is like everything we do with partnership. This is a relationship piece. And our relationship with Mayo is complicated. In some ways we compete with them through our partnership at Fairview. In other ways we collaborate. We're research partners with Mayo at the Hormel Institute in Austin and elsewhere. So it's complicated, but we're adults and we sort of work through that. But this campus at Rochester is efficient. It's being done the new sort of without a lot of overhead in the back room. They're relying on the Twin Cities. So I the whole board and the university is excited to be working with the community and Mayo on. And where it goes, I think, really sort of depends on the growth and of the city and of Mayo.
Thank you.
Joey?
Thank you, Madam Chair of Regent Beeson. Regent Beeson, what concrete opportunities do you see to better serve? And you said that you had a bit to mention about this, the coordinate campuses.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Dankwitz. And he'd always ask tough questions as a student regent, so I was kind of girding for one. what I've come to know about it's like a business that has subsidiaries or it has affiliates. Each campus needs to have somewhat of its own brand, its own strength, its own business plan, its own autonomy. So the case of Morris, I think we've really got this figured out it looks and feels like a private liberal arts college with great value, with a green or sustainable model, and I think giving the chancellors the room and the resources that they need to run those, they are businesses that are different but related to the Twin Cities. I'd like over time to have some of those backroom functions being operated at the Twin Cities, but there's sort of different levels of willingness to do that. Duluth is a large campus that's under a lot of pressure from the North Dakota schools for enrollment, and I want to talk about enrollment. That's my third goal, beyond operational excellence in the medical school, is talking about the demographics and diversity. And in a place like Duluth, we're better this year, but we've seen enrollment. I think the first sign of enrollment stress going on that requires a very different kind of marketing and presentation. So when we talk about Crookston as well, they all have unique strengths. And up there it's online and rural education, ag education. So it's really about giving them the tools and letting them, where they're strong is letting them get better instead of trying to homogenize them.
Just a little add up. Do you see any opportunities for the board specifically to help serve the coordinate campuses?
Madam Chair, Mr. Dankwitz, I've gone on the road with the regents and taken them around the state much more than we have in years past. We've been out there. Seeing the campuses and talking to the faculty and staff is really helpful. So then when we get requests and discussions, we can, really focus on that. The demographics jump out as the single most important issue. When I was out of Morris, for example, we've got 10 or 15% of our students that are international, and they pay full retail. We've got 10 or 15% American Indian. It's a national center for Indian education. Students coming from rural America are going to Morris. These demographics are changing so quickly, and they're first being felt out at these coordinate campuses. Twin Cities will always be able to, I think, recruit the students at once, and we may go a little further regionally. We may substitute out, go into suburban Chicago more, Denver, and some of these areas about where we get a fuller retail price and still maintain our excellence. So I think demographics, let's talk about that a little bit. And you have questions about it, because I think that is a huge third issue.
Thank you. We started a couple of minutes late, so I'm going to continue with our last two questions, and then I'll get us back on track for the next interview. Senator Pratt and then Lois.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Regent Beeson. I wanted to follow up on Ms. Carlson's line of questioning a little bit. You said the Wall Street Journal article was a wake-up call that one of your priorities is affordability through good stewardship. Can you talk a little bit more about your wake-up call specifically with that article, and also as being a now that you've been chair, certainly, I think, and your experience, you're going to be a leader on the board. What do you see your role in helping to achieve affordability through good stewardship and still addressing the wake-up call that you got?
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, thank you. It's like anything in life or in business. Sort of, we learn from events. Although I was angry with sort of the quality of the reporting and but I always find ways to improve the university. And I think, I think this just a general focus on operational excellence, bringing that into the culture of the university is really, really important. My role going forward, if I'm reelected, will be to, I think, make sure that those initiatives that are started, it's too easy to stop and sort of, well, we're done with that. This is a forever process. This can't ever stop. So we have to build it into the culture, and the board has to hold the staff accountable for it. And they're wired in a way that, you know, their great strengths are that they're brilliant and they're academically focused and they're creative, and learning is not linear. So, you know, they have problems in their own world, and they don't always think about costs in the same way a business person. So this is not a giant corporation that is, you know, that we're going to be focusing widgets, cost widgets. But it's really the board's balance in doing that. I see my role as being a mentor to the new members and trying to be a bridge, sort of going forward. on this. The president puts in his plan. It's really interesting. The strategic plan says, we will reject complacency. How many strategic plans have that sort of sense? We will reject complacency. So, again, a lot of this is about the president and continuing the path.
Thank you. Lois?
Madam Chair, Mr. Beeson, the university is referenced with regularity as A or B driver of the Minnesota economy. How are or should the implications, the benefits of that economic development role experienced in greater Minnesota? First part of the question addressed that way. The second part is, how can the board enhance that impact?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. Josephson. We have an economic benefit that leverages $13 for every state dollar that we get. We know our economic impact is about $8 billion a year, and it's distributed. One of the challenges at the university is that we have thousands of good works and activities and extensions and outreach that it's impossible to roll all those up into one little story. Instead, we do individual stories that you read about. But in my seat, it is so powerful. The work that's going on is so powerful, and a lot of it is outstate. We have 500 outstate employees. We've got 25 research outreach and experiment stations. We've got accredited campuses. The most important thing, though, is one of the most underdeveloped things that I've found on the board is the partnership with industry. We've now gone from zero to 75 partnerships with Minnesota businesses. We've changed around our intellectual property policy that makes it friendly for large companies, all the Fortune 500 companies that we've got in privates around the state, and the president's on a regular calling program. I'm on some of those calls, and they're all through the state. And there's problems that we can solve for every one of these businesses. So I think partnering with businesses, ag business, we kept our ag college separate, which is food and ag, and I think that was important. And the research were great in areas that outstate greater Minnesota has depends on. But it's just it's a relationship with that part of the stakeholder group.
I would invite you to make your concise and brief closing comments now.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm honored that you interview me and consider my name. I've worked hard, but more important than that, I hope I've been effective in furthering the mission of the university. I am an incumbent, so my record is public. You can talk to my colleagues. I am as energized and as focused, if I'm reelected, to continue the work going forward for all the people of the state of Minnesota. It's a great institution. I love the work, and I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.